Welcome to another episode of Telemetry Now. Today's show was just planned last night as we saw the news of the events of civil unrest and subsequent internet blackouts in Iran. As many people took to the streets to voice frustration over economic hardship and political repression, authorities responded by cutting off internet access and communications, a tactic Iran has used before to suppress dissent and control the flow of information. Monitoring groups like Kentik and NetBlocks did confirm a near-total digital blackout as connectivity dropped sharply amid escalating unrest across Tehran and other cities. In today's episode, Amir Rashidi joins us to discuss the situation in Iran, as well as the internet shutdown itself. Doug Midori, Kentik's Director of Internet Analysis and a colleague of Amir, will be with us today leading the discussion. So today we'll break down how this outage unfolded, what it means for connectivity and censorship, and why internet resilience matters in moments of civil crisis. My name is Philip Gervasi, and this is Telemetry Now. Thank you, Amir, for joining us today, especially at such short notice. And before we get started, please introduce yourself and your organization before Doug then takes over to lead us in today's discussion.
Sure. First of all, thank you for having me. And Doug, I really, really appreciate all of your help and support. You know, every single time you're dealing with crisis shutdown, you are with us. Really appreciate it. I'm the director of Internet Security and Digital Rights at Beyond Group. What we do is monitoring and researching and reporting on Iran's internet policy, censorship, surveillance, and also we are running a 24-hour digital security help desk, which is people can reach out if they have any kind of cybersecurity issues, challenges, or even internet connectivity issue, and we do our best to support them. Obviously, Mian running other human rights project, women's rights project, you know, ethnic minority rights project, but my colleagues running those kind of project, my focus is entirely on access, digital rights, and the security.
And FilterBan is an initiative or a program that you guys run?
FilterBan, or in English, FilterWatch, the website filter.watch, was originally a project of a small media, but they have transferred this project to Mian, and we kind of changed everything within a project, and it is what you see.
Amir, thanks for joining us. So we are in the middle of another shutdown in Iran, and this one is pretty severe. Really appreciate you taking some time away. I know you and I are both kind of working on this. This is your thing, so you've got a lot more depth in your background and knowledge about the situation in Iran. Before we get into the technical details of this internet disruption, would you maybe briefly just characterize for people who haven't been following the day-to-day news of Iran, what triggered these protests over the last couple of weeks and how did they snowball into where we're at right now?
Things start with, I would say the main thing that fanned the flame was the economic crisis. However, the protest currently is not about economy anymore. But let's go back to how this started. Right now, we are dealing with a country with a very huge corruption in any shape and form. And there are a lot of different crises, from energy to, you know, even pollution to economy. You just name it. Anything you want to name that a government is in charge of providing for people who are living in country is a crisis, everything. And Iran was just finished a 12-day wars with 12 wars with Israel, right? And what Iranian government have done was basically, when you look at the budget that was introduced to the parliament, they literally dedicated all the money coming from oil into the missiles program. And then you need money to pay people who work for the government and also for the development, right? And the money for those kind of things are coming from taxes that people need to pay. So I was talking to my dad. He's a retired teacher, and he told me, now I have to basically pay tax anything that I make. Everything that I make, I have to pay back to the government, and even put something on top of it and pay back to the government as a tax. So that fanned the flame within a bazaar, the main markets in Iran, which traditionally they are supporter of the Islamic Republic. Back then in the revolution, Islamic Revolution, they were a huge supporter of the revolution. They were paying a lot of money and things like that. But this bazaar today has nothing to do with the traditional bazaar.
Sorry, when you're saying bazaar, like, is this like, I think of like a souk or a market, like a, is that what we're talking about, or?
Yes. But this bazaar today has nothing to do with the traditional bazaar back in 47 years ago, right? There's a new generation, and you know, everything is different. So they came to the streets and start protesting, and because of the exchange rate of the dollar and everything like that. And so immediately Khamenei, the supreme leader, what country has the supreme leader? Let me think about it. The North Korea, right? Maybe just Iran and them. No other country I'm hearing that anyone called the leader of the country, supreme leader. So he came and said, yeah, bazaar is traditionally our supporter. So we're going to make sure they are fine. But people who are protesting in the street, they are not, coming because of the economic challenges. They are receiving support from our enemy, like meaning Israel and United States. By the way, I'm an enemy because I'm living in the United States, right? Sometimes in Italy, but I'm enemy too. But number of protests actually were not really that high. Actually was kind of going down. But another thing.
So what time frame are you talking about when you're saying the protests weren't high?
The first day up to the six, basically like a week time frame, right? After a first week, kind of the number of the protests was going down. However, another thing fanned the flame. Because they wanted to give some sort of incentive to the people because of the economic crisis, they announced, we're going to give people coupon and also 1 million toman, for every single member of family member, right? If you have like four people living in one family, they're going to receive 4 million toman. And they said that we're going to pay you 4 months in advance. So just to let you know,
$4 million sounds like a lot, but I'm guessing it's not.
1 million toman is equal to $7.
Okay.
$7, right? So that people see that as an insult, right? And that actually backlash. Immediately after that, we saw a lot of people came to the street, including bazaar and things like that. And finally, a day after that, I guess it was the 9th day, if I'm not wrong, Reza Pahlavi announced, hey, I'm calling on Iranian people. He is the son of the last king in Iran,
yeah,
right?
So I saw that detail. I guess I don't know Iran like you do. I didn't think that the Shah I know people aren't fans of the current government, but I didn't know that there was interest in bringing back the monarchy. Is that is that guy influential in Iran?
Some people like, some they don't. Okay. I personally, I'm not a fan of any king anywhere. Right?
Sure.
I'm the fan of democracy.
It's a little anachronistic, it feels like, to bring back the king, but okay.
Yeah. So he came back and called for people to come out and do the protest. And people came, right? Because keep that in mind, people have good memory from his father's time. His father's time, in my opinion, was a dictatorship, but economy was good, right? And you know, the Iranian passport was valid for traveling almost anywhere you want to go without visa and anything like that. Anything that you see, most of the Iranian, they see themselves as like they are very proud of their history coming sure. from like a Persian Empire, the first declaration of human rights, whatever, all of these things. And going back to that time, people see that particular period of time as, yeah, maybe we didn't have freedom, right? Freedom of speech or whatever, but the economy was good. We could make money. And that's the kind of trend you can see kind of almost everywhere. This is kind of rising, this kind of trend everywhere that people usually, they don't really care about democracy. They more care about the economy, right? You can find it in Europe, in US, anywhere else.
So the son of the Shah says everybody should come out in the streets. There was already it's beginning of like around December 28th or something. This is fairly recent, like 2 weeks ago. Some little protests started in smaller towns. You know, I think I saw you discussing this. It wasn't clear that it was going to amount to anything because these things kind of come and go. There's a lot of discontent, let's say, in Iran, just in general. And but then it seemed like it kept growing. It seemed like this factor with the son of the Shah calling people into the street, maybe it was just gave them the excuse they needed. And a lot of different factions seem to be aligning in going onto the street and protesting the government. Anyway, is there any other major factors?
No,
but it's mostly economic. People are frustration in the
frustration and economy. Yes.
Okay. So then, also, I guess leading up to yesterday, because we had we'll get into this technical details of what took place. But there's been some selective, internet blockages happening in rural areas. I know, like some of us, I've been trying to dig through data, trying to, you know, we can see some weirdness, I think we're all, those of us in the West, these internet companies, we're limited by, you know, the accuracy of the geolocation of some of our data. And they're just, you know, the services we use typically don't have airtight geolocation for rural countryside of Iran. It's just not well. So, you know, we'll see some disruptions. It's not clear where it is. Maybe our data says Tehran. It's probably not Tehran, you know. So it's been hard to confirm that. It's not to say it didn't happen, but that's right. There's been some smaller regional or localized outages taking place up until yesterday. Is that correct?
True. That's true. This kind of shutdown, Doug, I'm working on internet shutdown for maybe over the past 20 years. And this is the worst internet shutdown I have ever seen in Iran. And I guess it's kind of maybe true to say even all around the world, this is the worst kind. Because not only the internet is being cut off, you are cut off, you don't have access to the outside the country, but also you don't have access to the local network. In Iran, they have created this local network, kind of really, really huge country size intranet, right? But even local network was created because they wanted to shut down the internet, but at the same time keep running the local infrastructure, like online taxi, online payment, you know, everything that the modern government needs to run. However, that local network is being shut down too. Mobile has no reception. We've seen something that I haven't seen, maybe in Ukraine, that Starlink being jammed. This is also like...
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of topics here. We'll go through these one by one. I think this is important. I think also there's a lot of, you know, every time there's a big outage, everybody's tweeting at Elon Musk, like, hey, you Starlink turning things, you know, activate service in Iran. I think that everybody understands that it's actually working there. You know, it's not easy. You have to get the terminals and stuff, you know, but let's get to that. But before we do, how about the national internet National Information Network. At one point, when it was first started, it was, people were referring to it as like halal internet. This is the internet. Now nobody uses that term, but the NIN. I think it was back in 2011 or 2012 when it was first really getting up and running. Myself and a guy named Colin Anderson, who used to be really prominent in Iranian digital research, we've actually mapped this out, where we actually got servers inside of Iran and traced out, because what ended up we discovered was that they had numbered it. I don't know if it's still the case completely, but it was all 10 dot address space. Phil, you appreciate this. The country is like RFC 19. they actually route. And so every ISP was getting allotted 10 dot address space, and the national internal network, just to guarantee the traffic wouldn't leak out, they numbered it with this 10 dot address space, which is, I guess, kind of hilarious way to implement this. Obviously, no company then could ever use 10 dot address space in Iran once the national network. I mean, I know when we were writing this up, obviously this was done purportedly to protect Iran and protect, you know, from outsiders and stuff. They didn't want to get it. Somehow this would help them from not get it attacked, or they could stay online if they got cut off, or if they cut themselves off, they could stay online. I guess the thought that had crossed my mind is, you know, you're also creating kind of like a free fire zone. If an adversary of Iran wanted to just mess with, Stuxnet, the malware that went after the centrifuges in Iran, you know, it leaked out, and this was part of the danger of those kind of technologies. You know, it showed up in other places. It's being used for different things. If you wanted to just have like a free fire zone, everything's 10 dot address space. If you can get your malware in and just go, hey, anytime you see anything 10 dot, go for it. And if they put everything sensitive or important into that network, it seemed like you're creating a lot of risk there. But you know, that's they've I guess made their peace with that for many years now. This has been under development for many years. They have their own versions of like everything you can think of. It's like China, like they have their own domestic version of Google Maps and Google this, or, you know, go ahead.
They do have, basically they kind of replicate everything, you know, every single like messaging app, search engine, email services. I don't know, anything you name it. Part of it was because of the sanctions, but another part was also because they wanted these services to be able to shut down the internet and the local infrastructure working, right?
It also supports the domestic, technology sector, as it did in China. True. You know, there's a number of factors to that. I guess what's weird is they put a lot of effort into building this, and it seemed like for every time there's a shutdown, we've got contacts inside who are like testing this to see if this is working like as planned. I think in general, I don't know if you'd agree, if this has been, it's working generally up until last 24 hours. It's doing what they wanted it to do, try to lower the cost of having a shutdown, because a total shutdown is very costly. It disrupts business, it disrupts the government, all society. And so you'd like to have some kind of thing that lowers that cost. This is the point you made to me, Amir, when I was writing something about the internet curfews back in 2022, of this is the danger of this kind of thing, is that if you can lower the cost on the regime of taking the internet down, then they may be more likely to use this tool. And so I guess it seemed like, well, they're investing a lot of resources and time into this, they're building it, but why would they take it down? Is it broken, or is it intentionally? I mean, do we know? Because it can also be broken.
I think it's kind of combination of both, right? If you remember, like a couple of days ago, we were talking about how some APIs of e-governments they're broken, they're not working well as they used to work. It was like 3 days ago that we were seeing some suspicious activity, hearing something from here and there. And then a friend of mine told me, hey, I think we need to be ready for the internet shutdown, because one, they are informing the tech companies that be ready for internet shutdown. Two, something is not work as they supposed to work. I ask him, what do you mean? He said, look, I'm doing some business with the government on online, like let's say I want to renew my passport. And in order to they basically identify my identity, they're using API connected to another government office to just check, hey, this is my national number ID, this is my name, if it's right or wrong. And then, you know, as usual, you know, API send the information, get the information, and then do the rest of the job. And he was like, none of these APIs are working. All of these systems are kind of broken. Why at the same time all of this is broken? Either we are in war, or there is some sort of cyber attack or misconfiguration, or they are trying to be ready for internet shutdown. And then another friend said, who is working in data centers in Iran, he told me, yeah, that we were being informed that we need to be ready for internet shutdown. So it's like combination of everything, right? They trying to fix something, as we said, you know, this 10 base IP addresses, or even the design of the internet in Iran is very centralized, right? You have just two gateway, and one is basically providing internet for everyone in the country. So as soon as you try to change something, it's very likely that something's fall down, something's might break. And shutting down the internet is a kind of complicated thing, right? Because you don't have just a button to push and everything be shut down. You need to deal with so many different
things. I think they could. I think they, but they don't want to. Like, I think you've made this argument with your organization that there's been some growing sophistication over the last whatever decade or more, so that they, you know, you have the nuclear option like Egypt did in January 2011, where just everything 100% goes down. Okay, well, that's super costly, and also the government can't operate, and business, you know, everything can't operate. So they have to have some kind of more sophisticated thing. It seems like there's been a growing level of sophistication where they can be more selective and leave certain important things on, but most of everything else is off.
That was actually the kind of, from the government perspective, the success story of 2019 internet shutdown, right? Because back then, the system was not efficient as is today. It was not the things that we are seeing today. They shut down the internet, and then there was whole other crisis everywhere. Now they are very sophisticated. They can shut down in a particular neighborhood. They can shut down in a region. They can shut down in a country, in a province. And they have a very good chain of command too. It's not only on the technical side. Even the chain of command is very clear. And now they have the capability to whitelist things, right? They have the capability to say, we want this messaging application to be connected to the internet, and that's it, nothing else. We want this university, we want this entity to be connected to the internet in a certain way. We want ETA to, people can use ETA messaging app, one of the domestic messaging app. People outside the country, if they have Iranian phone number, they can make a call in Iran. But if they don't have Iranian phone number, they cannot make a call in Iran from outside. So it's very sophisticated in a way that gives them a lot of flexibility to how to run the network and how to disrupt the network, or even shutting it down.
I think the concern also is, if they're successful with the sophistication, you could have this could be a prolonged thing. I think with some of these outages back in the early days of like Arab Spring, Egypt is a good example. They kind of can't go on like this. They have to finally turn things on, even if they don't want to. But if you can come up with a way that, like you're describing, like whitelisting the things that you think are approved by the government, then maybe someone could, you know, keep this this block, these level of blockage for a longer period of time. So before we finish that, you mentioned that you think this is the most severe internet shutdown, and I've heard other people make that comment as well. I just want to compare this to a couple other high water marks. To my knowledge, there was the, you know, Green Revolution or whatever in 2008, 2009. There was 2009, and throttling. There was a lot of throttling. Colin was big on trying to document that back then. You know, the next one that comes to mind is 2019, Bloody November. So it was a couple of weeks of internet shutdown. Hundreds of people were killed. That's in my mind number one. So maybe we're going to surpass the impact of that one. The fall of 2022 was when the young woman was killed in custody for not wearing her head covering correctly. And there was weeks of protests. Most of that was internet curfew, where there was a shutdown. There was also internet curfew where they took down mobile service at night for a couple of weeks. And we wrote something up about that at the time. And now we're here. I don't know if there's any other big ones I've missed here, but I think what makes this one bigger than or more severe than the those other incidents?
So this one is very close to the one we call it Bloody November, right? 2019. Because it's very much same. At the beginning, you remember, we were talking about it, and at the beginning, we were like, oh, this one is close to the war, 12 days war situation, but immediately situation changed, and now it's very close to that time. Because back then, it was not just only shutting down the internet, it was also shutting down other communication means and tools, like phone calls, text messages, you know, all of these things. And now today you cannot even make a phone call from outside the country to into the country in Iran.
Was that possible in 2019?
I think so.
I don't recall.
Okay. It was possible. Yeah. If you make that phone call, you would hear some really weird pre-recorded voice in English. Which is a little bit weird. Why in English? Why are you assuming everyone called from outside in Iran they would speak English? And then we have Starlink, right? So back in November, Bloody November, Starlink was not a thing, right?
Sure.
So that's the difference. But during the Mahsa Amini, Starlink was a thing. During the war, Starlink was available also too. But we haven't seen any disruption on Starlink. Now what we are seeing is the Starlink also being disrupted. I have friends. Some of them using Starlink, some of them telling me they are seeing 30% packet loss. Some of them, they're telling me they're seeing 80% packet loss on Starlink. So obviously there is some sort of strong jamming. And I don't think this is the normal jamming. It's very much remind me what happened in Ukraine. It looks like this is electric warfare, right?
Right.
This is not a normal kind of blockage. That's why I'm calling it, this one is the worst.
Okay. Yeah. So I think you brought up Starlink, and I think again, correct my timeline here if I get this wrong. But I think again, in the protests and the shutdowns that took place in the fall of 2022, again, people are tweeting at Elon Musk, turn the service on, and he does, or you know, somebody does. The Starlink becomes operational. So just a word about satellite internet service. So Starlink wasn't the first to do internet over satellite. It is arguably technologically the most sophisticated and powerful, but it's been around for decades in one form or another. Usually, the providers have on their website an availability map that says what parts of the world they can radiate in, and that is usually or provide service in, and that has to do with where they have frequencies allotted by the ITU. There's a process there to get approval, usually with cooperation with the government of the country. And then also, depending on the country, there's a lot of countries, a lot of different rules, but they may require a license from the telecom regulator to provide telecommunication services in that country. And so then you end up with this patchwork. Everybody's got a patchwork. Starlink has a patchwork. They have their own availability map. And so in the case of Iran, they allowed the service to operate there. The Iranian government has complained to the ITU, provided evidence that it's operational. They want it shut down. The ITU doesn't really have an enforcement mechanism. They've just kind of relayed these on and just said, okay. And they said, okay, US and Norway is the other representative for Starlink. Like, you should tell Starlink to turn it off. And Starlink is kind of like, we're not doing any, we're not changing anything. And so, you know, it's kind of a, you know, I don't want to be in a position of defending, you know, the Iranian government in this case for sure. Cause this is a lifeline to a lot of people. Anyway, so this has been, I think it's not widely understood that there are just thousands of operational Starlink links presently in Iran. That is not a fact. I think people generally understand. And there's a lot of people relying on that as a way to communicate to the outside world. I didn't really know until like this past year, the extent of that. I knew, you know, it's possible. Of course, there's big risks, like the government has, the Iranian government has said that they, you know, I don't know what they're going to, it's criminal to operate, you know, and so what that means for you could be severe.
New, go ahead. Well, according to the new law, which was passed a couple of months ago, having a Starlink is equivalent of running espionage operation for Israeli.
Okay, that sounds pretty bad. So to get, I mean, you have to get a terminal, you get the physical equipment in, there's smuggling that takes place. And so then these things, yes, might make their way in. The global constellation will allow you to connect so you can serve, you can get service. They don't show up on the availability map, but we all kind of know that's not 100% accurate as far as a representation of where, Starlink works and doesn't work. But we are, I guess, pretty grateful, that service exists, because people are, this is how Amir, you and some of the other colleagues are able to reach and get the truth out of this country. Otherwise, there'd be no way, especially if they shut down the voice lines. So this is the worst because of the voice. That's it's never been a total internet, total voice, you know, plain old telephone connection. That's that wholesale total communication blackout has never occurred. Yes. Is your argument? Okay.
No, not to this extent.
So now they're jamming potentially Starlink, which is kind of wild. So they've really taken it to that that level. I guess in the sequence of events yesterday that I was seeing, so we saw all of the IPv6 routes pulled. It was morning my time in the East Coast of the U.S. So we see in BGP, just there's no V6 routes anymore. Having said that, V6 was only a small single-digit percentage of traffic for Iran. It's maybe operationally to the average Iranian, they probably wouldn't have known that this took place. But they, to us who are internet watchers, are like, "Ooh, that looks bad, because that's you're completely severing something." So it looked ominous, and sure enough, a few hours later, then we started seeing like this precipitous drop of traffic levels going into Iran, all the way to the point where, 18 hours ago or so, it went to near zero. We never kind of really completely reach zero. There's always something a little trickling out, and then we've kind of been in that state. And then today, we're seeing like little bits of things coming back. And and your theory, or maybe you've got this confirmed, Amir, is that this is part of the implementation of a whitelisting. So what are they going to try to do? This allow just certain websites or what?
Yeah, certain websites and services. Because so there are a couple of different things. One, the Iranian government is very sensitive about its image. For them, I know when you look at it from outside, like, oh my God, they're killing people in the street. How are you saying they're concerned about their own image? But for them, it's very important to put out their own narrative. It really doesn't matter if you buy it or not, but they have this kind of attitude that it's very important for them to put out their own narrative. So in order to put out their own narrative, where are they going to put it? On a state TV, nobody trusts state TV. But also, there are people outside the country are important for them to see what's going on, right? So they need to enable their Telegram channels. They need to enable their ETA channels. They need to enable their website, which publish in English news about what's going on in Iran. So they need to whitelist those things first for the purpose of having control over the narrative.
Okay, for propaganda.
Second, exactly, propaganda. Second, still there is a government in place, and the government in place means you need to run a bureaucracy. And for the running a bureaucracy, you need to have your bank functioning. You need to have your health system functioning. You know, all of these things need to be functioning, and they need to be connected somehow to the internet, because even if you have the local network, still you need to connect to the internet. Maybe at least for updating your own server or something like that, at minimum, right? So you need to have some sort of connectivity outside world. So that's another reason for whitelisting. And something that today came, which again, this was news. I haven't seen, this was new. I haven't seen this in the past, that the Ministry of Intelligence, basically security service, sent mass text message to everyone in Iran and told them, if you see someone with, have you seen this things in New York subway? If you see something, say something.
Sure.
If you see someone who is doing XYZ, send us a message on ETA, on Bale, all of these domestic messaging app, or send us the information through our own website. So even for the intelligence gathering, you need to have some sort of connectivity, right? And that's another reason to whitelisting the thing. Plus, they have their own follower. They have people who are using something we call it white SIM card. Have you heard white SIM card?
Yeah, I've seen you use that term. I don't know what it means. What does that mean?
So white SIM card basically means your SIM card, no filtering would be implemented on your SIM card if you are eligible.
Oh, how do you get one of those?
Okay, that's also something else.
if it's sensitive, you don't need to tell me. I don't.
So you need to vet it by the government, and the government trusts you to give you uncensored internet. Something we call it white SIM card, right? And none of these white SIM card, they were connected to the internet. One of their main job is to go on Twitter and say, "Hey, everything is fine in Iran. There are a couple of terrorists killing people here and there, and the police is doing its own job in US, in Europe, everywhere. Police, you know, doing that. That's a kind of protection. So you need that propaganda arm, and that's why you're giving some of people this white SIM card, uncensored internet, to put out the government narrative and the propaganda. So you need internet if you want those army to go on Twitter and other social media. You need some sort of connectivity.
Okay. So, as you mentioned at the beginning, we're in the middle of this. So the service is down. We saw some partial restorations to universities moments ago, although that seems to have ended. Maybe so. It's very much in flux. Everything's up in the air. What do you think is going to happen here? Like, is this? Are we reaching the end of this government, or is that much to hope for?
Look, every time there is a protest in Iran, there are people who calling it revolution, and most of the time, almost every single time, I always disagree with them. This is the only time I'm kind of agree with them. This is a revolutionary moment, but at the same time that I'm happy and excited, obviously I'm concerned about my fellow Iranian who are being killed or shot in the street. But at the same time, I'm happy because I think we have a real opportunity to make a better country. But at the same time, I'm deeply scared and concerned because I don't want to see Iran become another Syria, which I think that's a possibility.
Like a post-Assad Syria or with Assad Syria? Sorry.
With Assad Syria, okay. What Assad did after the, you know, the kind of civil war and things like that. And I think I'm optimistic that there are options that people can overthrow the government and keep the country united and not turn into a civil war. I'm really, really optimistic. But, you know, this is the Middle East. Look at Syria. Look at Iran. Look at Afghanistan. Look at, you know, everywhere. So anything in the Middle East is possible. We have this kind of expression in the not even in Iran, in the Middle East. We're saying, if you see a horror movie and you're scared, you never lived in Middle East. So anything is possible. Anything is possible. But personally, I'm optimistic and I'm hopeful and I'm trusting my fellow Iranian citizen that they make the best decision, and hopefully sometime soon we can go back and live in our own country.
Okay, well, I think we'll be, you and I are going to be trading notes probably the rest of today and this weekend until this thing is resolved, which there's really no way of knowing how long this persists. But thanks so much for coming on and sharing your thoughts. I think a lot of people.
Thanks to you. I know you work for a private company, not necessarily private company, do the private business, but this is what we need, that support you provide. We really, really appreciate it. I hope, other big tech see how collaboration between civil society and private tech firm can actually enable people, makes their life better, and learn from this kind of collaboration. I really appreciated your help.
Yeah,
and support.
I feel strongly about this. I mean, this is bigger than just this Iran issue, but we have the benefit and the private internet tech firm. We have a lot of data that is useful for things other than just monetization. With not that much effort, we can help organizations like yours that help provide some insight into what's going on, and so that we get some marketing value out of that. But I think at the end of the day, a lot of us personally want to see wider internet access and greater freedom in the world. So it's worth it.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Amir, and thank you, Doug, for joining us today and for your insight into the situation as it unfolds, and of course for the historical context that you were able to provide. And as this situation develops, we look forward to seeing your reports on social media, blog posts, podcasts in the coming days and weeks. And to our audience, thanks so much for listening today. Bye-bye.